Our next guest is an associate professor in the Department of English at the University of Victoria. She's published on 16th century English drama, English Reformation martyrology, and writings by early modern English women. She's currently editing Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew for the Internet Shakespeare Editions and serving as an associate editor for the journal Early Theatre. And here to tell us more about Catherine Parr, the historical figure, is Erin E. Kelly. Hi, Erin. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you on this stage again.
Nice to see you too.
Catherine Parr. What was Catherine Parr's early life like?
In some ways, not atypical of a 16th century woman of her class. She was from an aristocratic family, and so her early life involved connections to the court. So her parents, Thomas Parr, was a friend of Henry VIII's and at court. He married a woman named Maud Green, who was 20 years his junior. And Maud was actually one of the ladies-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII's first wife. So why then is Catherine Parr named Catherine? It was quite common for a lady-in-waiting to name her children after the woman she served. So Catherine Parr is actually named after Catherine of Aragon.
Wow.
Catherine Parr's father died when she was five. At that point, she was the oldest of three children. She had a brother, William, and the youngest was a daughter, Anne. And Maud, at that point, did something rather unusual, which is that she didn't remarry. Instead, as a widow, she managed a household, so Catherine did have this unusual early life in being raised in a female-headed household. Mm-hmm. And Maud took her children's education very, very, very seriously. She seems to have modeled the education that her children had, both the girls and the boy, on what was happening in the household of Sir Thomas More. And so these children had an incredibly rigorous humanist education. They learned Latin. They learned modern languages like French and Italian. They studied theology. They studied classics. And so Catherine Parr really grew up with this excellent education, this strong female head of household, and I think that might help to explain a bit of what happens later.
Now, later on, she was a published author.
Yeah.
And I admit that surprised me. I didn't know that. How common was this for a woman of her time to be a published author? And what can you tell us about her writing?
It's an interesting question to think about Catherine as a published author, because in some ways, she was unusual. She was the first English woman to have her works appear in print with her name on the title page. So her works were printed, which meant they weren't just made public, but actually put out in this mass-produced form, and actually in these quite small books that were a very cheap format. So they really were produced for mass readers. And her name, Catherine Parr, Queen, was on the title page. And that was quite unusual. She's also unusual because, believe it or not, some of you probably still read her work, even if you don't know it. So any of you who are Anglicans and have the Book of Common Prayer in your church, the prayer for the monarch that is in the Book of Common Prayer even now is the prayer for the monarch that Catherine Parr wrote in her prayers and meditations, and it became part of the Book of Common Prayer during the reign of Elizabeth. So the fact that her name appeared on her works and that her works are still kind of around makes her unusual. That said, there actually were women writing in the 16th century and even before, and that arguably is part of what influenced Catherine. She certainly knew works by women on the continent. Henry VIII's mother did some translations, and she clearly knew about those and was influenced by those. And there were other women at the time who were reading and writing. A lot of their works probably don't survive, because the other way to publish in this period was to circulate your works in manuscript, and a lot of those manuscripts simply don't survive. If you really wanted to keep something private, you kept it in your head. As soon as you wrote it down, you were, in effect, publishing it.
Mm. What about her previous marriages? She was married twice before she married Henry VIII. What can you tell us about these previous marriages?
So the first marriage was to a fellow named Edward Burrow, and she was about 16, 17 at that point, and he was also relatively young. One of the things that Maud Parr devoted her life to at that point, after her husband died, was trying to arrange advantageous marriages for her children, and that would be the kind of thing that someone of her class would want to do. And so the Burroughs were another prosperous aristocratic family. It was a fine alliance, but it probably wasn't a very happy marriage because Edward Burrow's father was certainly known for being tyrannical and having a terrible temper and was probably insane. There was clearly insanity in the family. I'm not using that in some metaphorical way. He may have been just outright bonkers. And so for the first couple of years of the marriage, they lived in the household with the father-in-law and then did manage to get their own household set up. But that marriage ended after 3 years when her husband died and it hadn't produced an offspring. So then at that point, also Catherine's mother had died. So Catherine, as this very young widow, was left with not much in the way of resources, and her brother had just been married, her younger brother, but didn't really have a place in his household, and her sister Anne still remained single. So Catherine moved in with cousins and seems to have met her second husband, Lord Latimer, while living with those cousins. She married about a year, 14 months after her first husband had died. Lord Latimer was actually about 20 years older than she was, and he had already been married twice himself, and he had two children. She became the stepmother to those children and was a very, very active and devoted stepmother and really took care of them for the rest of their lives. During the marriage of Lord Latimer, during all of this time, she really was in the northwest of England, which is where her mother had settled and where a lot of the family was originally from. But during her marriage to Lord Latimer, something happened called the Pilgrimage of Grace. And the Pilgrimage of Grace in 1536 was basically a northern uprising amongst religious conservatives, basically Catholics protesting the reforms that Henry VIII's break from the Roman Church had brought about. And one of the things that happened at that time is they kidnapped Lord Latimer, and he sort of played both sides between the king and the rebels. He then went to court, and while he was at court, his castle was actually overrun, and Catherine and his children, her stepchildren, were actually taken hostage. After they were eventually freed, not surprisingly, the family moved to London and relocated to the south. Lord Latimer never really seems to have recovered his health after that. He very nearly got himself in trouble for treason. It really was his connections with Catherine's family that kept him out of trouble. But he did die soon after. And then 4 months later, she was married to Henry VIII.
And that sounds like a story in and of itself. How did she catch his attention?
Well, at this point, after she had moved south, she followed in the family tradition. Her sister Anne, at that point, was part of the household of the Princess Mary. And Catherine became one of the ladies-in-waiting to the Princess Mary. And Henry seems to have had a habit, aside from Anne of Cleves, who after she showed up in England, he decided he didn't like, and got that marriage dissolved. Every other one of Henry's wives he met because they were around. So Catherine of Aragon had been married to his brother and was around. Anne Boleyn was a lady-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon. Jane Seymour was a lady-in-waiting to Anne Boleyn. Catherine Howard was a lady-in-waiting to Anne of Cleves. And Catherine Parr was a lady-in-waiting to his daughter. He didn't really go shopping very far outside of the household. Think of it as sort of ordering online. And apparently, we do have good records that he was wooing Catherine while Lord Latimer was on his sickbed and she was nursing him, that she at the same time was being sent these very lavish gifts from the king. And since it was the king, she really couldn't refuse.
Do we have any insight as to how a woman would feel being wooed by someone with a bit of a dubious track record like that? You know, whose previous wives had met such unfortunate ends?
I think that's an excellent question. And it is worth noting, I mean, there not only did Catherine have reasons to not be entirely too happy because he had, as you nicely put it, this dubious track record, but as well, she might very well have worried because Henry did seem to lose his affection for wives when they didn't produce children. And Catherine had two marriages up to this point with no offspring, so that might have been partially a worry. And as well, at that point, she does seem to have been in love with Thomas Seymour, who she was exchanging letters with at that point. So she also had someone else who she very much wanted to marry. But she does testify later that when the king started paying attention to her, that she believed sincerely, and people in her family and her advisors told her, that this might be God working through her to try to bring about the reform of the church in England. And so in some ways, she seems to have thought, not just you have to do it because the king wants you to, but possibly God is using you for this larger plan. And so it is now time to step up and do what God wants.
And she did.
She did.
And how long were they married for?
They were married in not quite 10 years. They were married in 1536, and Henry dies in January of 1547.
Was she ever at risk in all of those years?
Oh, yes, she was. Very much so, particularly in the last year. And I have to, if you'll indulge me, this is one of my favorite stories, but doesn't actually make it into the play, because I think the play rightly is giving a contemporary take. But what happens is that Catherine is very devoted to church reform, and she, while she was queen, had preachers come and preach to her and her ladies and members of her household. She read very, very widely, including books that were officially prohibited as being heretical. She argued theology with the king, and she was engaged in projects like translating Erasmus's paraphrases of the New Testament, so she knew what she was talking about. And at a certain point, Henry became quite annoyed with this, possibly, probably, at least partially, because he also had some religious conservatives at court who, when he would complain about Catherine bossing him around, they would back him up and say, yes, it's totally inappropriate and how terrible she's being. And finally, some of them started trying to gather evidence against her to accuse her of heresy. And had she been found guilty of heresy, she would have been executed. And they basically went after her in two different ways. And she managed in part to save herself, but she also managed to be saved because of the actions of a very, very brave woman. So I want to tell about this woman quickly. There was a woman named Anne Askew. Actually, her married name was Anne Kyme, but after she left her husband, she went back to her maiden name. And Anne Askew was one of these reform-minded Protestants. Under Henry, the church had broken from Rome, but it hadn't really taken up many Protestant ideas. So Anne Askew didn't believe that the bread and wine literally turned into the body and blood of Christ. She believed it was symbolic, and that was considered heresy during the reign of Henry VIII. And so Anne Askew was around in London and met with Catherine Parr and members of Catherine Parr's household. Anne Askew gets accused of heresy. She gets brought to the Tower of London, and she's racked. It was illegal, officially under English law, it was illegal to torture anyone. It was particularly unheard of to torture a woman, and particularly a gentlewoman. And during the time she was racked, what they kept asking her was, have you had contact with the queen? Have you had contact with the queen's ladies? And Anne Askew did not answer under torture, and then was burned at the stake for heresy. If Anne Askew had given Catherine Parr up, Catherine Parr would have been executed for heresy.
Wow.
The other thing that Catherine did do then is that there was a warrant written up for her arrest for heresy. her doctor saw it and told her this was going to happen, that he had seen this warrant. She took to her bed and said she was deathly ill and sent word to the king. And when the king came and said, "Why are you ill?" she said, "I've heard that I'm out of favor with you, and I believe I will die if I don't have your love. I'm so, so heartbroken." And he said, "Well, then why do you argue with me about religion, and why do you keep fighting with me?" She said, I only do it because I know you have this pain in your leg, and I thought you liked it, and I thought it was distracting you, and plus it gives me a chance to hear your wisdom, and you're so wise, and I'm such a foolish woman, and I'm so sorry if I've done the wrong thing, darling." And he buys it, and he pardons her. And when they show up, when actually soldiers show up to arrest her the next day, and he chases them out of the room and beats them off and says, how dare you go after my good and obedient wife?"
And she outlives him.
She does.
And what do we know, what can you tell us about her life after Henry VIII died?
Within about 4-ish months, she has married Thomas Seymour. On the one hand, good for her. On the other hand, it does cause her no end of problems, because at that point, she was left quite wealthy. Had she remained a widow, she would have had her own independent household and done quite well. But she really does seem to have been deeply in love with Thomas Seymour. There are some very passionate love letters between them. And she marries him. And then when she marries him, because she's the former queen and because he's the uncle of the king, and they have married in secret without permission, they are in trouble. And when Edward, who's now King Edward VI, finds out about this, he is not happy. And his protector, who is Thomas Seymour's brother, is not happy. And so they basically spend the next year being out of favor at court and trying to regain some political power. She does get pregnant, and then she dies a few weeks after giving birth. And that is very sad. And on the other hand, I have to say, one of the reasons that people often seem to find Queen Elizabeth I so fascinating is that she never married. And yet I can't help thinking that if you are Queen Elizabeth and you have seen Jane Seymour die in childbirth and you have seen Catherine Parr die in childbirth, you maybe are not so ready to get onto the childbirth train. Approximately 50% about 50% of women in the early modern period, their cause of death would be childbirth. That doesn't mean that 50% of pregnancies ended in death, but that would have been the most common cause of death for women in this period, would be childbirth.
We're almost out of time, but I can't let you go without asking you your thoughts as a scholar on the modern interpretation of this. It's a contemporary take, somewhat freely. I wonder how you feel as a scholar about Catherine Parr being interpreted in this way.
I can put on my scholar hat and be sniffy and say, "Oh, they've got this date wrong. Oh, no. And yet, I personally am delighted, because I think that whenever you're looking at historical events, we have some facts. And then when we turn those facts into history, we are telling stories. We are implotting a narrative around the facts. And the stories we tell do say something about that earlier time, but they also say a lot about us. And when we look at stories we tell about the Tudors, they tell us a lot about what we are thinking about women and women with power and women in political power. And this particular story is not like anything I've ever seen before, told about one of Henry VIII's wives. And so I am delighted and excited and looking forward to seeing. My understanding is that the playwright is writing a trilogy, and that the next plays she has planned are about Queen Elizabeth and then one about Mary, and I am so looking forward to seeing what she has to say.
Erin, thank you. Nice
thank
to see you,
you
again.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Erin Aaron E. Kelly is an associate professor in the Department of English at UVic.